Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
By law, 21 plus terms and conditions apply.
Welcome back, everybody, into Bill's Chat. I am Josh McCarty. With me tonight is Luca. And Luca, for the first time in the history of Bill's Chat, even though it is NFL free agency eve when we're recording this on Sunday night, and we're going to talk about it, we're going to talk about the fact that the Bills have made a trade bringing in a former Pro Bowl player. They've traded away a former All-Pro player. That happened on Sunday night. They've retained one of their own. They made some releases. But we are going to start this show with hockey, because right now the Buffalo Sabres are a wagon. They're 8-1-1 in their last 10 games. They are now leading their division, had an absolutely captivating 8-7 win over the Tampa Bay Lightning. Our guy Luca was in attendance. Luca, tell us about your experience. Tell us about the game. Tell us about the hockey team.
I mean, it's crazy. I was telling you before we went live, it truly is a unique feeling right now. The game itself, just the emotions of the result from the game, and just kind of a culminating everything of recent years. This just like even talking just this generation of player group that's currently on the roster and trying to imagine what they've been through for seasons now. And they had one decent-ish run to maybe making the playoffs a few seasons ago, but outside of that have played absolutely meaningless hockey at this point every season. And to go through the roller coaster of this game, this season, being the best team in the entire league since December, essentially, it's just there's no words to describe the euphoria that any fan worth their weight in gold is going through right now on Sunday night here, following that game. And I mean, it was the longest game I can remember in some time that didn't go to overtime. It was an hour long first period, thanks to the numerous, I think it was 18 total penalties called in that first period alone, that had vintage hockey for all of 60 minutes through and through. I mean, you had a total of 15 goals and over, I don't even know, 100 plus penalty minutes. It was just chaotic in all the greatest ways possible from a hockey perspective, from a Sabres fan, of course. And this team is absolute wagon status for sure. And it's mind blowing to think. I went to the game tonight with a friend, and we talked about it. Like, we both were at a game this season where they welcomed in the St. Louis Blues on an L9, who had willingly benched one of their best players in Jordan Kyrou, and they looked miserable. And yet somehow the Sabres put together such a poor performance that they lost that game 4-1 and looked like an absolute disaster. They go and start a West Coast trip later on at that point of the season and look like a disaster in Calgary, one of the worst teams in the league. And it's insane to think that we're now sitting here in this team. It's almost impossible to not let your brain get carried away and think about how far this team can go this season. And, you know, like, I had the guys to my right, shout out those guys. I don't know their names at all. Never discussed that. But I mean, they were asking me, you know, cause I think they could tell just based on how I was sitting there, the comfort me and my buddy had, just like, even during a tense game, they're like, they clearly knew I was seasons, and they were asking me questions left and right, like how excited we are about playoffs and how available do I think they will be? When do you think I'll find out and stuff like that? And you could tell it's on the brain and stuff. And I looked at my buddy Taft and I was like, the last time a stranger at a Sabres game asked me how I'm feeling about Sabres playoff hockey and how excited I got to be, I was a child the last time I went to a game like that. I could not legally drink. I could, like, there, it's just, I told you, I, you know, people have fandoms the way they are, and I'm not trying to disrespect anyone. This feels greater than, for its own unique reasons, it feels greater or more crazy to me personally than when the Bills broke their 17-year playoff drought, just because of this season alone, as well as kind of how things felt previously. You know, like the Bills one kind of had its slow progression up that season alone. They even had a good start where then it had its little bit of a lull in the midseason and stuff like that. This one was, I mean, vibes couldn't be worse. Game one, you have a viral clip of a guy just screaming his head off how he's never going to see good hockey in his life and he doesn't know why he supports the team. Game one. And like, it's the same season. It feels like ages ago. It's the same season, same year. And here we are, and not one person in this city, not one person in the fan base thinks that this team can't go on a run. And it's the exact same roster, not tons of turnover, not a lot of crazy changes. It's just, it's euphoric. It is, everything about it is shocking in the best way possible. And it just tonight's game was just absolute special nature. It's just jumbled in my head. You know, I'm looking forward to talking Bills football because that will feel structured and normal. Mm-hmm. Because like we can't sit here and talk hockey the whole time, but it's impossible not to start there, as you said, especially because they are sitting alone top in the East with everything in front of top of the Atlantic, sorry, with everything in front of them. And it just, you don't know where the end is going to come because this team is capable of anything and everything, as we saw, even in this game alone, in recent games during this stretch, all the way going back to December. I mean, they are capable of everything and anything. And it's an incredibly exciting time to be a Buffalo sports fan when you now have a team. Yes, we're in the offseason of the NFL and the Bills didn't get to the highest, you know, point that we want to see them, but they are still a quality team and we still have Josh Allen to root for. And now finally another team in this city, it feels like it's been so long, is relevant and capable of going on their own run. And it is just, vibes could not be greater right now to be a Buffalo sports fan.
You mentioned the comparison to the team that broke the drought. And I just, as a diehard Bills fan, the 17-year drought was a moment in time where when that Andy Dalton pass to Tyler Boyd gets completed, it ended the drought. And that was as fun as I've ever had as a sports fan in that moment. But it was almost weird that the Bills hadn't broken the drought before, because that wasn't even like the best version of the Bills from the last 18 years. And when you see some of the mediocre teams that sneak into the NFL playoffs, we saw a Kyle Orton Bills team go 9-7, but they lost, you know, to the Raiders the week before and they didn't get in. We saw a Bills team lose to the Steelers backups in 2004 when they had nothing to play for and they could have gotten in. We saw the Bills lose in Toronto to Atlanta, who had nothing to play for, and EJ Manuel's first year. And, you know, you so many times it's like they're right there and then they just find a way to blow it. It was so weird that the drought lasted that long because the Bills were never really horrendous during the drought, except for like 2010. The difference to me is the second the Bills ended the playoff drought, my mind never went to the playoffs. My mind was never, I thought the Bills could beat Jacksonville because Blake Bortles was their quarterback and yeah. You know, you never know, but I wasn't at all going to be like, they're going to go on a run and beat the Chiefs with Andy Reid, and Patrick Mahomes looked like a superstar at the time. Tom Brady was still in the bracket, and it was, you know, no, it was get this anchor of a playoff drought off of our back. The Sabres, not only are they going to end their own playoff drought, they look like, much like the modern day Bills, a team that can actually win the whole damn thing. And that's where the difference is because you mentioned a team in St. Louis, which, by the way, St. Louis, hey, Colton Pareko, are you sure you made the right choice? Because it kind of feels like you would have had some fun.
No hard feelings.
At KeyBank. Yeah, no hard feelings. but the Sabres legitimately can win the whole thing. And that to me is where it's so different. And it's just, it's exciting to see. So as people know our show, I'm much more casual hockey. You are Mr. Saber on this show. What would you say right now is the biggest thing keeping the Sabres from actually going on a run? Like, if the Bills going into the playoffs last year, I would have said, I just don't think that their defense can get stops against elite teams. And I would have been wrong, but because, like, ultimately it was their offense turning the ball over four times in Denver. But, like, what do you see right now as, like, they're going to have to be better than they've been in the regular season to really do this thing?
The easy answer, and I think tonight's game even against Tampa, which was a true perfect litmus test for all the reasons, was just inexperience. I mean, it truly is. The other easy answer is the questionable goaltending that could raise their, you know, rear its ugly head. UPL was far from good in between the pipes, but not that it matters. You get the win in regulation, especially, it's great. But inexperience, you saw tonight a team that was clearly, both teams knew exactly what was going on tonight. Like, Tampa and Buffalo both knew exactly what the hell the crowd was expecting from this game and what each other understood the severity or the importance of this game was. And the Sabres, credit to them, had the step early on and you know, rode the energy that was in the arena and clear as day, and got out to that 3-0 lead eventually and a 4-1 lead thanks to a shorthanded goal from Tuck. And you could tell it was like, oh my God, vibes are incredible. But then experience started to show up for Tampa, and they were dominating 5-on-5 play in the second period and early parts of the third period. And when that was occurring, and when Tampa started rolling, when they started scoring goals, you could tell every guy up and down that lineup for the Sabres gripping the stick tight, not seeing the ice the way that they would normally when comfortable and relaxed with their shoulders and stuff like that. And the moment was getting to them. And I sitting there, you could see it on the ice. You could feel it in the arena as well. I mentioned to you off air before we went live, it was crazy with how packed that barn was, how quiet it was once Tampa took the lead early third period. I want to say quarter for a second, third period. I have never, when the Sabres were good, heard that barn that quiet with that many people in it. I mean, you could hear every call out on the ice. You could hear the refs calling stuff out as if you were sitting right on the boards. I mean, it was deafening how quiet it was. And the players on the ice clearly felt that too. But luckily, for whatever reason, even in the inexperience of it all, they were able to figure out who, or remember who they are, I should say, and work through that. And even as Dahlin was getting bossed around at one point, he still stepped up with a huge goal of his own in the third period. And Zucker makes a great play, who kind of had a couple questionable ones during that poor stretch. He gets a goal. I believe he was the tying goal. And then Josh Doan forks up, shout out ASU, scores the eventual game winner. It just, inexperience is absolutely the thing to be most nervous about, because if they don't get the bounces, like if they're not at home and they, if that game structure for the first two periods and going into the third period happens in Tampa or wherever else, wouldn't surprise me one bit that Buffalo absolutely folds. I mean, it's just, it's a different environment. It's a different world. Things get called differently. You're not going to see as much called, as especially as much as you saw tonight. And it you've seen enough from this exact roster in tough moments when things are going against them that they have crumbled. Now this year and in this stretch, they have shown resilience and capability of going back. And that's what you hope they can, you know, grasp onto if things don't go right, rather not think about all the times that things have gone wrong or how they're in over their heads and they've never been here before or whatever it is. But it's also natural to understand that. I mean, Owen Power, Rasmus Dahlin, the captain of this team and who's been with the Sabres since he was drafted first overall, has never sniffed playoff hockey. Alex Tuck, for him, feels like a century ago when he had the save of the Cup series against Washington done against him as he had an open net. And what was the goalie's name? Holtby, I think it was, reached his paddle back and took it off of the goal line from him. you know, that's the playoff experience Alex Tuch has. Tage Thompson, zero playoff experience. Like, it's just, that is clear as day your number one concern going into playoffs, where you're playing a game like this, exactly like this. This was a playoff game atmosphere, of course. And it, at least the nice part about today's game was it had that feeling. And I even, when they gave up the lead, I will admit it, I looked at my buddy, I said, regardless of the result, this has been a hell of a game. And at least they get that, like, kind of pass if they were to lose this game, as in, at least it didn't kill your season, like a playoff loss would be, especially in that manner. But it's one that you could actually lean on from experience to be like, hey, this game, this, we can point to this one. We know we're capable of winning playoff games. That one got away from us. Let's never do that again. That in the playoffs can kind of, like quicksand, get to you real quick and you get over your head. And it just, there's not a lot of experience in that dressing room. There's some, but there's not a lot of experience in that dressing room to lean on to understand, hey, just one game, 7-game series, blah, 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 all that kind of stuff. Whereas like a team like Tampa, you know, the team like Carolina, even though they're a little bit of a meme since they always get to the conference final and lose, a team like Pittsburgh, of course, like those guys have, those teams have championship pedigree. Those teams have playoff experience that, you know, when things don't go their way, those ones are going to be the more comfortable ones to still grind through it, understand what's important, how to get through that game and not let it get to you, even if the result ends up not going your way, but the series isn't over. Like the Sabres, you know, they don't have that. And that's the thing that could ultimately kind of bite them in the ass from making a big run. But then again, sometimes they always say to be naive can almost help you as well. Like that's probably what helped the Blues just plug away. You know, they were a team that felt like they were playing with house money every playoff game because they looked at the standings just like the Sabres did in December. And they're like, we're dead effing last. Like, what does this matter? And then you go on that incredible run. They ride a hot goalie and they get to the, you know, the mountaintop. They get to the cup and it's, they were just naive and incapable of doing what they knew they were capable of doing. And that's what, you know, to flip it on its own head, that's what the Sabres can use with that inexperience, is kind of like, hey, brush it off. We're playing with house money. We're not supposed to be here. And it's like, yes, you are. You're one of the best teams in the league right now. Now go make that run.
You know, having experience is great, but not having experience losing can also be a good thing, because I think as Bills fans, one of our biggest fears is these guys in the fourth quarter of playoff games could get tight, because it's only human nature to have a here we go again mindset. But if you're a young player, or you're a player on the Sabres that hasn't experienced that moment, then you don't have the moment of letting yourself down. And you know, I do wonder though, when you look at what the Sabres did at the trade deadline, I know some of these guys, when you look at the various hockey charts, didn't jump off the page, but Luke Shen and Tanner Pearson both have Stanley Cup championships.
Yeah.
Sam Carrick has been in the league, what, he's 36 years old. He's been in the league forever. And Pearson was a guy they traded for like right at the final buzzer. So it seems like a calculated effort to not only inject some depth into this team, because such a massive thing in the NHL when these teams start wearing down in the summer, but to kind of inject some back-end experience to make up for some of the stuff you were talking about. Luca, any final thoughts on these Sabres before we turn our attention to the Buffalo Bills?
Just, man, I can't wait for the next few weeks as we then look towards the playoffs, and it is inevitable with this team. And I am here for the roller coaster ride. I mean, this week alone, Josh, we get a game on Tuesday at home. We get a game on Thursday at home. And then the Leafs game, which will just be an absolute cherry on top to finish the week on Saturday night. That is what it, there were doubts, you know, last year, this time from me and stuff like that, where you just like wonder, is it even worth it being a fan of this shit organization anymore? My childhood organization, the team that I loved more than life itself at times and moments. It's like, it's surreal to be in the position that we are. And I get to, you know, and we as fans get to enjoy so much more of this, you know, for the next month or so before then we finally get back to that one place that we've all craved to be. And that is the playoffs. And we get playoff hockey in this barn. And there's a very good chance right now, as it stands, that you're doing it as the Atlantic Division winner, which is just incredible. Chef's kiss.
It's a beautiful, beautiful thing. Look, you know what else is a very beautiful thing? NFL free agency. I'm going to say it starts tomorrow or today, whatever you're listening to this. We're going to upload this on Monday. Legal tampering is not a real thing because by definition, that is an oxymoron. But you can start legal tampering and teams will start announcing deals on Monday. It makes Monday one of the best days to have a work from home day or to not have much going on at work. Let's work backwards. We mentioned the fact that the Bills made a trade on Sunday night. This one will not take long to get into. Last week when the Bills went through some of the releases, and we'll get into what those were, but one of the players they mentioned releasing was Taron Johnson, and that didn't really free up a lot of cap space for them because of the restructure that Brandon Bean did last year at the trade deadline. My understanding of why Brandon Bean restructured Taron Johnson's contract at the deadline but ultimately didn't make a move is there was a different deadline that day for when restructures had to be turned in and when the trade deadline ended. And Brandon Bean had to give himself enough room that if he were to make a deal, he could make the deal. That's a little easier to stomach. A lot of us have been like, why would you do that if you didn't have to pull that lever? That's how I understand it went down. Instead of releasing Taron Johnson, the Bills are going to be trading him to the Las Vegas Raiders in exchange. The Raiders are going to swap a sixth-round pick to the Bills. The Bills give them their seventh-round pick back. Luca, you and I have kind of been on this train for a couple years now. Taron Johnson is not the same Taron Johnson that returned the pick six against Lamar Jackson or just blew up plays in the backfield as the Bills' big nickelback, for years. Still a decent player, but somebody that I think was kind of a liability in coverage for the Bills. Interesting that they are able to get some sort of value for him. Not surprising that he's ultimately off the roster.
No, not surprising at all. And it's Taron, the downturn of Taron's game. It shouldn't be surprising. You know, I always say the classic time is undefeated. That's one part of it. But when you really kind of understand the role and responsibility that Taron Johnson had on the McDermott defense, there's a lot of snaps where you're asking a larger defensive back to put in linebacker snaps. I mean, that is going to take its toll quicker than your, traditional linebacker. I mean, those are big hits, big boy plays to be made. And, early on and during the we'll call it the prime of his career, he just showed that he was capable of doing that and his value was clearly there. But it just sadly isn't sustainable for a long period of time. And eventually there comes an end to that for an individual like Taron Johnson. And I we wish him all the best in Vegas. But like between his downturn in play and then it just not quite understanding where his role would truly fit in this new look defense, all of these variables and stuff like that. It's like the fact that you got some sort of value while it was publicly known you were going to be releasing him. That's just a nice little kind of cherry on top to the whole situation. And then I will say, like, I remember also seeing things when he was originally announced to be released come start of the new league year. And people are like, that's crazy. He's still got stuff in the tank or, you can't switch him to safety or whatever. It's like, well, one, the player has to be willing to make that change. It's not like every corner, like you would in Madden just magically becomes a safety later part of their career because they still have the brain capabilities of understanding how to cover and or can move somewhere where maybe their legs aren't as, important, but their vision and ability and all that kind of stuff that comes with years of playing in the league will still, help them out. It's like the player has to be willing to do so. And then two, sometimes, especially when you see these defensive changes and stuff like that, and you have that niche guy, like, I look at him like he's much far better player than who I'm about to name, but I look at him like a back in the day, Deion Buchanan, who for a couple seasons there and Todd Bowles' defense with the Cardinals was a very key role as what they called the dollar linebacker position. But like he disappeared immediately because his niche role was no longer needed on that particular defense. And then also like the no one else utilized a player like that in that role. And he wasn't good enough to be a safety. He wasn't good enough to be a traditional nickel and things like that. It's like he was just excelling as this DB dollar linebacker situation for whatever years. And it was like he was a very impactful player, but also it's like very niche, very specific. And then from there, it's like when you make that change or something is changing with that defense, that niche, that specialization player, like it's just not, that specialized player is just not needed anymore. And if you're paying them what you're paying them and you need to figure out how to nickel and dime your way to get back to the green in the salary cap, let alone get space to sign free agents, that becomes an expendable resource and you need to figure that out and move on from it.
I kept trying to mute my mic and I kept coughing right into it. My mute button is not working. So sorry about that, folks. All right. Taron Johnson is gone. I want to group the next two moves together because I do think it's going to start a more interesting conversation about the offense. The Bills on Saturday re-signed Connor McGovern to a 4-year, $52 million deal with $32 million guaranteed. Now, this is an important reminder, not only for McGovern, but in general during this free agency period. Take contract numbers with a grain of salt until the contracts are officially posted on Over the Cap and SpotTrack and those sites to go through. A lot of it can be agent fluff, and Brandon Bean, you know, for a lot of his knocks, is a wizard at making contracts that sound huge look great. And the big thing is, when can the Bills get out of it if things go wrong? For example, Terrell Bernard signed a mega deal last offseason, and Luca and I were right on there saying, actually, they can get out of it after 2 years if they want to with very little pain. Very similar for Christian Benford. Would not expect them to get out of that one, by the way. Anyway. Luca, Connor McGovern was a priority for you and I. I was kind of surprised they kept him on the heels of what Tim Graham wrote in The Athletic, that the Bills hadn't been in contact with him. And when it comes to the Bills and Tim Graham, I trust everything he said. So I do think maybe there was a little bit of urgency felt by the Bills, like maybe they needed to get back in there and talk to their guy. But ultimately, they keep McGovern. We've talked about how important this offensive line is to the success of the team. We were the ones on the podcast saying, when everybody would say Josh Allen has no help, we're like, well, he has one of the best offensive lines in football. That's quite a bit of help. I'm glad they kept their pivot man at center. I think we're both expecting a new face at left guard, but you know, bringing back 80% of what was considered to be one of the top three offensive lines in the sport, and you keep your center in tow, that's a win for the offense.
1,000%. I mean, I said this a lot to people that I talk to regularly and stuff, just in casual conversation and stuff. And it's like, when you look at the NFL, it just, to me, is, you know, someone that watches a lot of football and stuff like that, but I'm not going to sit here and be like, I'm a football guy. It's not like I understand the intricacies of the offensive line. I'm not someone that would even be remotely closely qualified to be an offensive assistant of the offensive line, let alone an offensive line coach or anyone that can evaluate offensive line play. But when you consider history and just understanding positions of importance and things like that, it feels like traditionally your bookends and your center are the important slots on the offensive line, and the easiest thing to find is capable guards, or the easiest thing to work around is the guard play and kind of where that can go from there. And that's also what makes, you know, the situation where, you know, the projection right now of David Edwards' market value is 19.9, but then McGovern was seen to be around what he inevitably signed for in the 13 range. It's like, well, why, especially as a team that's a little bit of cap strap right now, why would you not find yourselves rather keeping McGovern with this offense and with the quarterback that he's been working with for years now, rather than the more expensive option that is, you know, David Edwards, and figuring it out from there? I love seeing that. And then from there, you can just figure it out with the most cost-effective options at guard. You know, whether it's Alec Anderson is just going to be playing that left guard spot. You know, I would like to see him beef up a little bit if he does. It feels like he's a little small. I'm not calling him a small person. It's just in comparison to when you see like the guard opposite of him next season, he's going to look like a tight end playing left guard. That is because Torrance is, of course, a massive human being. It's just, you can get around that, though. You know, you have Deion Dawkins still sitting there as the left bookend. And then, of course, now you are retained and brought back McGovern to be his helping hand on his right hip there at center, whoever the left guard is, that for that matter. And then, of course, Spencer Brown on the right bookend with Torrence in between those two. You're still going to have one of the more premier offensive lines. This offensive line isn't just the tackles carrying the load kind of here. It's like, it's a collective unit. And the fact that you were able to get to a number that's palatable for both sides and understandable for both sides, that you can now go into the free agency pool with four of your five returning. That's a great spot to be. And, you know, McGovern is a heady individual. He understands his role and responsibility, as well as Dawkins, who's been around a long time. Whoever that individual is that they plug in at left guard, you know, come week one, I'm sure there will be a long time previous that will get him ready to go and ramped up, that we will still be one of the premier offensive lines, thanks to those two being on either side of him due to this contract. So I'm a big fan of this. I like keeping the center. I like the optics of bookends and center being the pieces that are coming back. You know, I'm not sitting here saying I disregard Osiris Torrence being back, but I will say it brings up the conversation too of, you know, come next year, are you going to make Osiris Torrence one of the most expensive guards in the league? I think my thoughts are also going to be pretty similar that come that time as well, but this sets it up so it makes it even more palatable once again come that time, if you have to, you know, reassess this whole line, you know, the offensive line once again come next offseason.
Yeah, and I just hope that they bring in competition for Alec Anderson. You know, if he ends up being the best man for the job, great. But, you know, one move you've talked about for years is, what if Cedric Van Paren Granger ends up showing that he is a capable center? You could always kick McGovern back to his pivot position of guard. And I mean, what a great person to lean on, McGovern, if Van Paren Granger is the guy. I wouldn't bet on that. I know some folks think that Chase Lunt or Tylan Grable could play guard. I would expect the Bills to take an interior offensive lineman or two in this upcoming draft. Okay, let's have a DJ Moore conversation, but let's not start with the trade package, because I do think that can bog down the conversation. We will get there. But I think by now, most people are like, okay, the trade is what it is. What do we actually have in this player? I think you could make the argument, Luke, before I even get going, the Bills did the thing I wanted them to do this offseason. They went out and aggressively addressed wide receiver with a proven commodity. Luca, too. I mean, the Bills ended their season with Brandon Cooks off the street, Mecole Hardman off the street, and being upset that Tyrell Shavers, who was on their practice squad, was injured the week before, and they were down that many players that forced them to have to play Keon Coleman. This team desperately needed a proven wide receiver, and DJ Moore is that. I think you could make the argument. I don't know that I would co-sign it. I think you could make the argument that by keeping Connor McGovern and already addressing wide receiver one, the Bills could just about be done on offense. I mean, you got to bring back Reggie Gilliam. We've talked about that. Like, that's a move that needs to probably happen, although, you know, fullbacks might be getting paid this offseason. You know, you figure out what you're going to do with Knox's contract. But, you know, when I say just about done, I mean as far as like massive swings. Will they take a receiver in the third or fourth round? Probably. I mean, don't wait till the seventh round to take a receiver. Take somebody that might be able to come in and help you. But I think you could be just about done taking swings for people that you think have a legitimate shot to come in and start for you.
I think the argument's definitely there. I will say, I'm not even going to be like, I absolutely would refuse to co-sign that. Yeah. They shouldn't be done. Now, what does that mean? I'm not saying they're going to splash more money in free agency to address that, but I feel like you still have a premium asset being a first round pick in this coming draft that it, there still could be capable individuals on the offensive side of the ball that you end up utilizing that pick to do so whatever you can with to make it happen. And they could be a guy who can contribute come day one. Where I will say I understand the argument is, I'm not talking, we're not talking contribute, we're talking impact. And that's where I would be like, okay, you can sell me on the term impact, because of course DJ is an impact player, and McGovern being the center that has been and will now continue to be for this great offensive line is impact. I mean, the offensive line is what it is. So, you know, someone that I'm sure was ecstatic about, you know, McGovern also re-signing was James Cook, because he understands those guys in front of him last season helped him put up the numbers that he did and make him capable of doing what he's doing. So the impact players on this team, even outside of Josh Allen, based on the moves that they've made and done to this point, I can buy that. But I refuse to believe that it is acceptable to let it end there. I just whether you just take another shot on a third round receiver, fourth round receiver, you know, a one is capable of being got in the first round, however it is, however that is, maybe there is another guy who can contribute in free agency that is not a ridiculous number, and from there could come in and be part of the rotation that maybe bolsters your already very expensive receiver room to be a little bit more credible. I think there's still things to be had out there that makes it like that should happen. Like, I don't know. I can't get my head around being like, you know what? This guy who absolutely can be a dynamite number one, but also has shown even on his last offensive play in a meaningful playoff game, kind of, if you want to say, quit on the route, ran a shit route, whatever you want to call it, to the point where even Chris Collinsworth's calling you out on it because it's picked off. Like, it leaves a bad taste in my mouth where it's like, you're going to be done with that. You're going to accept that. Now, I will also say, I'm not trying to sit here and speak poorly about the player, because if there's a change of scenery and room that he's then walking into that maybe can wipe that out of his game, it's seeing Josh Allen practice every day, being in this very established culture when it comes to the locker room and the building and the facilities and all that, that maybe he will understand the day-to-day is important and the play-by-play is important and no plays off and stuff like that. And like, look, if your game's not good enough, it doesn't matter how much they invested in you. I mean, Keon Coleman was healthy scratched. Like, they will go and find a Brandon Cooks off the street to then magically become the number one guy on this team. They will depend on practice squad finally making the team Tyrell Shavers in big moments. They'll go down the memory banks and go find Gabe Davis, who was just cut, because at least he had good rapport with Josh Allen. Like, they are not afraid to do those kinds of things. And it's like, you need to understand the day-to-day matters. Every route matters, stuff like that. And they're not happy with the guy that they invested in Keon Coleman as it is, for similar things that you have shown on tape, although you are way more dynamic when it comes to DJ. But it's just, I would love to believe that those things won't rear their ugly head, but the last play you saw him on the field, and you can't tell me it wasn't meaningful football, because of course it was a divisional round playoff game. It's like that kind of stuff leaves a bad taste in your mouth, where it's like, I would like to believe you're not done with potential offensive contributors, but at least I will accept impact players. You're in a better spot now than you were last season, so I can understand you kind of not breaking the bank or making a big, big splashy move for an impact player anymore, because the money's just not there or the assets aren't there anymore, whatever it is. I can buy that, to say the least.
All right, let's table the DJ Moore conversation on the what do you call it, the trade compensation, till the end. Because I do think everybody's head now is like, what's next? And we love DJ Moore, the player. I think for what the Bills need, it's a perfect fit. I will raise my hand and say I would have rather had DJ Moore than Rashid Shaheed. Now, when the price tag that came with it, that's where it gets tricky. But if it works, great. And I do think there's a chance that we're going to see what some of these wide receivers like Alec Pierce sign for in the next couple days. And maybe we're all feeling a little better about what the Bills gave up for DJ Moore. You just mentioned some pieces that can go with them. There's a few intriguing names out there in free agency that I think the Bills could be kicking tires on. And when you look at what the Bills have now, with DJ Moore, Khalil Shakir, and Joshua Palmer locked in right now as your top three, And then you have Tyrell Shavers coming off of the torn ACL. And, you know, who knows when he's going to be ready to play. And then I am still not convinced that Keon Coleman is going to be on this roster next season. I think it could be a trade away. There are spots on this depth chart to fill out. And I do think there's room for somebody to come in and push Joshua Palmer as the Z. There's two names I like for that role. Maybe one name I like for that role. And then a couple other names I want to throw at you. If the Bills want to get a little aggressive, I like Darnell Mooney a lot. He's a guy that when Drake London has been down, has been like a pseudo number one in Atlanta. I think he's a really good route runner. His hands are inconsistent. He can stretch the field. I think he brings a lot of the same skills that we were told Joshua Palmer has, but has a much better resume of staying healthy. Two other names that I think we could keep in mind on. Christian Kirk is one of Josh Allen's best friends off the field. And that's not nothing. And he's an experienced player that maybe you're not excited about having on your team in June, July, and August. But when you get to December and January and say Khalil Shakir goes down and can't play in a playoff game, instead of bringing in Mecole Hardman off the street, you have Christian Kirk, who's maybe been inactive for half your games because you don't need another slot guy. Or, you know, Joshua Palmer's hurt again, and now Christian Kirk slides in there instead of Keon Coleman. I think that's a sneaky good ad for the Bills. One other name I want to throw out that I think you'll be a big fan of. The Bills also need a punt returner. There's a guy out there that you stumped for in the draft. Calvin Austin. Not only could he come in and be a gadget guy, I don't think much more than that offensively, maybe a little more, but could be a dynamic punt returner and then a moving chess piece on offense. Do any of those names whet your appetite?
I think the funniest part is, of the three names you gave me, the first one's the worst one to me. Like, I'm like, Darnell Mooney just doesn't do it for me. Mm-hmm. But, like, Christian Kirk, there's a personal connection that love-hate relationship. Goes back to him being a five-star guy coming out of an Arizona high school. It felt like he was on the radar for a school I love. And then Texas A&M pre-NIL era just randomly swooped in and took him away. And then his very first game, he's absolutely destroying my beloved Sun Devils. So there's that. But then, of course, he was a Cardinal. He was very dynamic, and I loved watching him then. I think the high end of Christian Kirk at full health is still very, very intriguing that this offense could use. And his hands, I do think Christian Kirk has quality hands. I wouldn't call them exceptional, but I think they're good. And then also the Calvin Austin idea is just, you said it's spot on. I loved him as a day two, day three guy to target out of Memphis, Calvin Austin III. I thought his speed and dynamic nature was something that the offense at the time needed. It still feels like it needs. And it's a fun, you call him a gadget guy. I think he's like a gadget plus. I feel like he can at least provide you some real receiver reps, but the speed is undeniable. And on top of it all, you mentioned in the special teams world, he can absolutely be a dynamic punt returner for you. And that's something I even have a friend, for instance, that is like, we need a dedicated punt returner because I can't be seeing, you know, Khalil Shakir out there watching balls sail over his head all the time and things like that. It's like, we want a guy who wants the ball and wants to return it and make big plays happen. And it's like, I get it. You know, I don't think it's just, you know, Khalil Shakir out there letting the ball sail over his head all the time. I'm sure that comes at coach's direction and he just takes it a little bit more literal than you'd probably want. But also it avoids the Roscoe Parrish errors of the world, i.e. Cleveland Browns game 2009, if you're not thinking of what I'm thinking of here. So Calvin Austin, though, just does provide that elite speed dynamic checkmark that's like, man, tell me another receiver that is capable of this gear that he is on the roster right now. And I just don't think it exists. I mean, DJ Moore, of course, is just a powerful and also has speed to his game, but it's not Calvin Austin speed. It's not, you know, that third gear kind of deal that feels like it is still in the bag. And he's still, I think Calvin Austin is only like 26, 27 years old. So it's, you know, he's still in the prime athletic part of his career. And even in Christian Kirk's case, I believe he's still just under 30. So, you know, I think Christian Kirk's been around for such a long time that it feels as if he should be older, but he's still got game in his bag. That I love both of those ideas, because on top of it all, those are budget ideas. Like, those aren't going to come at a great cost. And as a team, once again, that is strapped for cap, like, those feel like, you know what those feel like, Josh, is those feel like absolute, like, high floor, you know, I'm not going to give it a ceiling thing, but they're like high floor gambles. They're not even gambles, though. They're just low end investments that can really reap high dividends and provide you legitimate roles and capabilities to this team that they have not had in the receiver room for some time. And that is something that we've, of course, craved for a very long time. So I'm a big fan of those last two, you know, Kirk and Austin the third.
Yeah, I think both could offer a lot. And again, Christian Kirk, just to me, as a professional receiver, he may not wow you, but when you talk about the floor of the room, you know, I'm all about building that entire depth chart. And I still think that would give the Bills the opportunity to add somebody in the draft, which I have a big appetite for, because when you look at it, they have Keon Coleman, who's still on his rookie deal, but that's not going well. And they have Tyrell Shavers, who is still young, but, you know, just tore his ACL. They've got to add some pieces to the pipeline here, where you're not signing veterans constantly, because the one thing about Calvin Austin, Christian Kirk, Darnell Mooney, Dyami Brown, anybody like that, you're getting them on a one-year deal. So even if they do well for you, you got to pay them again next year. That's where you need to always go to free agency. Luca, as we sit here on the eve of the draft of free agency, what position do you feel most confident the Bills are going to try to address? Because I have two. I feel like they're going to most want to address edge. But I think the position that I think comes off the board first is probably safety. I would love for them to get in on the bidding with a Jalen Phillips and reunite him with Greg Rousseau. Or Boye Mafe. I mean, I know there's people that are really high on him. Not my favorite idea, but he's better than AJ Epinesa. You know, Trey Hendrickson would be a dream. Odafe Owe, I loved him coming out of the draft. And he really did great when he went to the Chargers. I don't know if the Bills are going to be able to pony up the $20 million it takes to get those guys. But I think that will be somewhere they try to swing. But this is such a deep class of free agent safeties that I think I'll be stunned if by the time we're on our live show on Wednesday, if the Bills haven't found themselves one.
This is almost, when you look at the free agency pool and then you even combine it with the draft, Josh, this feels like the offseason of the safety. Mm-hmm. There is just so many capable options that you can almost go value shopping for it, whether it's in the draft or in free agency, that you can always go wrong, but it's going to be harder for you to go wrong. There's guys that I like that could be there at the spot that the Bills are going to be drafting, but then we're talking about free agency, of course, and there's absolute dogs in free agency right now. I mean, according to the tracker alone, like, I can count more than one hand how many guys I look at that name and I go, yep, I would sign them. I mean, right now I'm down under the 10 million mark, and I see Jalen Thompson, who played in Arizona, and I'm like, Jalen Thompson's is he an elite safety in this league? No, he could. He can create special plays for you, and I have no problem. I would have no problem whatsoever having him outside or out there alongside Cole Bishop. I'll tell you that for free, because Jalen Thompson will do everything. He's a junkyard dog style safety that it's like, he's almost like an actual athletic version of someone you wanted Taylor Rapp to be, but it's like, oh, this guy's actually maybe not that athletic and stuff like that. It's like Jalen Thompson will do things. And also being aside Buda Baker for a lot of those years, you see some of the similarities in their game now just from them playing with each other, that it's like, yeah, I like that style safety out there to be paired up with a Cole Bishop, because that could be needed and special in this. And then as I keep scrolling, I mean, it's crazy to me how many, like, Safety is one of those things where I feel like a lot of the times in free agency, you see the older guys starting to hit the market and stuff like that. I mean, there is an older guy like Kevin Byard out there who it doesn't tickle the fancy for me as much as some other ones, but it's like, that's normally what you see at the safety position. And that's pretty much it. But when you have your Jalen's and you have, I think Brisker's still out there, and you have Reed Blankenship, and you have, these guys are all sub 30 years old. They're all guys that, you know, for a team that needs to fill the safety position, you have options. You have that, where the question you're asking is, what do I expect to be signed? My bet would be on the safety position being signed first, because it's a position of need next to Cole Bishop, for one. You're changing your defensive philosophy, and it feels like one where you need to absolutely address that back then going forward, because I will just put it where, yes, you want to address edge and pass rushing, especially because we're doing a formational and design change, but you could also, you could talk yourself into working with the pieces you have on the defensive line right now for even that kind of change. Does it feel optimal? No, but you could tell yourself you can't do that with your secondary and your safety position right now at all. Like, there is not another guy. You're not going into this with what you have right now and feeling any sort of okay with it. So I think safety for me is the pretty safe one. I will say, if they were to go into the free agent pool for guard and go, I'm going to call it bargain shopping, but I'm not trying to sit here and act like they're going to sign someone that they found in the lost and found bin for a cheap deal. But there are some names out there in the guard world that you look at kind of where their estimated value is, and you think about who the player is, and it's like, I absolutely could see that guy being the next left guard for this offensive line. I mean, Wyatt Teller, of course, is one name. There's a name, of course, you've mentioned as well, that could be a legitimate answer to it and worth getting there, that it's like, you now know that you're missing David Edwards. And if the offense matters to you and you want to address that, and you have an offensive minded coach, could easily see guard also, if a number makes sense for a player to come in and fill that void that's going to be left there from David Edwards. That would kind of be my wild card bet for first signing. But I will take the safe bet, and I will say safety is what I would most likely expect, and I have no problem with whatsoever as well. I mean, Kobe Bryant, Brian Cook, those are the little bit more expensive guys. But then, I mean, I'm going to tell you right now, my favorite, if Jaquan Brisker is still out there and you can get him to a number, I cannot tell you how much I love Jaquan Brisker enough. Like, I love every inch of his game. And it's like, if he's available, truly available, and you can get a number that makes sense to you, holy shit, bring him in.
It'll be interesting to see how much they prioritize familiarity in Leonard's scheme. Because for the longest time, I feel like Damar Hamlin had a job in Buffalo, because we can try other safeties, but Damar Hamlin has time on task. He knows McDermott's scheme. We can put him out there. And then I look at someone that is listed as a free agent from Denver, PJ Locke, 29-year-old safety. Spotrac has his market value at $3.5 million. I could see the Bills easily signing that guy with no intention of him starting, but giving themselves a floor if they can't go out and get a Kobe Bryant or a Brisker or get somebody in the draft where maybe they don't have to take a safety in the draft, because now they're like, okay, well, we still have Locke here. You know, we'll see what happens. I'd be very curious in that. And I'm with you. I want to see the Bills, as much as familiarity matters. Brisker, he is just shot out of a cannon, and he's a dog, and this defense could use some more dogs. And I would love to see, I don't know if he's the archetype of what the Bills would look for, because I think stylistically, they still view Cole Bishop as that robber role, and they want somebody to be the deep third to complement him. I think he can do both. I think the skill set is in his bag, and I'd love to see Brisker come here, and just for the attitude he would add to the team as well. The guard you mentioned that I talked about was Elijah Vera Tucker. I have no idea what the market can be on a guy that has failed to finish three of his, you know, five professional careers, so a professional season so far. But when he was healthy, he was looked like the next all-pro, 10-year all-pro, you know, all-decade guy. And I just look at a guy like him and think, you know, would he be willing to come here and take a prove-it deal and be a part of what is projected to be one of the best offensive lines in the sport? get on national TV, what you would expect four or five times, play in a couple playoff games, hopefully at least, and you know, put some good film out there and then get really paid next offseason. That's what the Bills can offer these guys. That is one of my favorite ideas. I think those are the three main positions the Bills really need to attack, though. It's what happens at safety. That thing is really thin. I would love to see the Bills get their hands on one of these edge rushers, but it feels like safety and edge rusher are really the two positions the Bills got to look at. I think the other one is linebacker. They're losing Shaq Thompson, or, you know, he's a free agent. They're losing Matt Milano. Terrell Bernard looked very broken down last year. I think maybe they could talk themselves into Terrell Bernard and Dorian Williams as their inside backer combination. I don't know how people would be super excited about that after what they saw from Bernard last year. One name getting a lot of steam with the Bills, though, is Leo Chanel, the old linebacker from the Chiefs, played for Jim Leonard at Wisconsin. I don't think he's somebody that I have to break the bank for. I can pull up his SpotTrack market value now. What do you think about that idea as a safety? And then I'll throw another name out there. Would you be willing to pony up a little more money for someone like Tremaine Edmonds?
Tremaine Edmonds. Oh, my goodness. Wouldn't that be something? Tremaine Edmonds is definitely a, hey, man, like, this number better make sense. Like, obviously, he's not going to make nearly as much as he was. I think his projection is in, like, 10. The 10 area.
Chanel is 4, by the way.
Yeah, I was going to say, I know Chanel's 4. Chanel, though, checks a lot of boxes for me. Mm-hmm. Age is always one of the boxes, and he's certainly there. He's not even 26 years old. Love a lot about his game. Front foot, run stuff, style, dog. You know, I would even go as far as calling him a junkyard dog. Like, this guy, he pops. I think he honestly, watching him in Kansas City last season and maybe even the year before, it felt like the one thing you can go, I think Leo Chanel's young enough that we talked about him during one of our draft preps. I know he was a guy I circled whatever draft year he was, and I'm pretty sure we were doing our show now that we're in season 5 here. The thing I questioned about him, and the reason I thought looked at him as, like, you know, late day 2, early day 3 guy, which is, I believe, right where he ended up going anyways to Kansas City, is, like, there was questions about his ability to, you know, pass coverage and understand his role and responsibility in pass coverage, or he can get lost in space. He's not the biggest of individuals well, so he really is a front foot first kind of linebacker. You know, maybe a little bit of a throwback as well. This last season, and maybe even last 2 seasons with Kansas City, it felt like that part of his game improved immensely. I felt like Leo Chanel was the kind of guy who was definitely reading the play much better than someone I expected coming out of the draft. And that, you know, natural development, obviously on a great defense with a great defensive coordinator and understanding everything he was asked and whatever. It showed to me that at least he was a student of the game and coachable and stuff. You now bring him in with a guy who's familiar with him and understands what he's capable of and stuff. I think that is just absolute perfect match. And the fact that his projected value is not even one that it feels like you need to kind of stretch some pennies and move things around to make it work for this team in this cap situation. I love everything about that. The Tremaine Edmonds one, real quick to kind of go back to it though. Yeah. It just, would I welcome Tremaine Edmonds back on this defense and this linebacker core? 1,000%. I mean, athleticism through the roof still. There's parts of his game that's not that great, but if the number made sense, if he's willing to work within the structure of our cap situation, I think a reunion would be more than welcome. And, you know, I would be fine with that. But I would even sit here and tell you, I think I like the Leo Chanel idea even more so. I think mm-hmm. that one just checks a lot more boxes and makes a lot more sense. And I will put the little caveat that there's a tiny little bias in there, because I'm almost certain, Josh, if we went back to our, I love that we're at a point now where we're talking about free agents that we talked about draft prep going back. We've been doing this long enough that I know for a fact he is a name I brought up and highlighted and was like, kind of like this guy a lot. And we also have other acquaintances who are fans of his game as well. That, I love the idea of Leo Chanel being in that linebacker room. And I will say linebacker was on the back of my mind, even to the previous question where it's like, what would you like to see address first? I will say there's some linebackers out there. I don't think it's a great linebacker pool in the free agency world, but there are guys like Leo Chanel that definitely are like, I would be prioritizing somewhat to see if you can get him, because that would be an impact guy, especially on the defense.
If the Bills can come out of this free agent class with, say, Leo Chanel, Prochet from Denver, and then an edge rusher that you feel like can start opposite Rousseau, or at least split time with Michael Hoyt, expecting him to be healthy, I mean, that's all you could hope for as a Bills fan. And, you know, maybe a role player receiver too. I mean, they're not going to have a ton of money to play with. Before we get out of here, though, Luca and I made the conscious decision on this episode, we're not going to go through a long list of free agents, only because by the time you listen to this, unless you listen to it first thing on Monday morning, free agency is already going to be on the back burner. We are going to be live on Wednesday. We're going to be talking about everything that the Bills have done, haven't done, need to do, what's happened in the league. But we just didn't want to put too much time into, hey, the Bills should go after, you know, Wyatt Teller, rank the guards, and then all of a sudden, you know, Wyatt Teller is a Tampa Bay Buccaneer by the time you listen to this, and doesn't make sense. But let's talk about the DJ Moore trade from the compensation aspect, because I went live on our Bills Chat YouTube and Twitter when the trade happened, and I loved it. Everybody, it was a vibe. I said, this is exactly what the Bills needed. I know it's a decent sized cap hit. They can restructure it, but, you know, at the time it felt like they probably floated the Bears like a sixth round pick to take some heavy salary off their hands. And then the word came out that the Bills not only traded a second in exchange for a fifth for DJ Moore, but also guaranteed $12 million of his 2027 salary, which essentially makes it like a true 3-year deal at this point. It's one of those things where I don't want to be disingenuous. I hope DJ Moore comes in and is the best receiver pickup the Bills have ever had under Brandon Bean and blows away everything Stephon Diggs did and is the catalyst to the Bills winning a Super Bowl. And I think that's within his range of outcomes. I truly do. But I can't sit here on March 8th and tell you that the price they paid seems like good business. It feels like they were bidding against themselves and got spooked and decided just to make the deal happen because they desperately wanted a wide receiver. It doesn't feel like someone like DJ Moore, who saved the Bears a ton of money by finding a trade partner versus having to cut him and take a massive dead cap. It feels like the Bills didn't realize how much leverage they had in those trade talks, or maybe the market for DJ Moore was way hotter than anybody on the outside could possibly know. It was jarring to me, Luca, when I saw the second for a fifth. Is that going to cripple your offseason? No, it's a second round pick. It's a pick in the 60s, but it does feel like an overspend that, you know, doesn't feel like good business.
I love this conversation because anytime I'm asked, anytime I think about it, whatever it is with the DJ Moore trade, I always tell people it's two stories. It's two situations. Do I like the player? Yes. I like the player. I love the possibilities of what the player can bring and what his capabilities are and his high-end nature that he is. Love everything about that. But put that aside and just evaluate the trade itself and what it took, I mean, the contract situation alone is just like the extra dick kick where it's like, what? This guy hasn't even stepped foot in the building and you just basically locked him in for 3 years. And it's like, you better be right, because I mean, holy shit, you're putting yourself in a worse situation now. But, you know, to even go previous to that and the fact that you moved a two to then get him in a five in return, I look at that and I go, could this deal really not get done with a late third straight up? Just DJ Moore for a late third straight up? Because then magically to me, what that does is make your day one of the draft, your night one of the draft, still fully capable of doing whatever you want to do, whether it's move up aggressively, move up a little bit, move back, so on and so forth. By moving that two, you now have kind of handcuffed yourself where you're like, if there's a guy that starts to tease you a little bit and be there where it's like, I could aggressively move up here if I had my two, you can't do that anymore. Like you've limited your capabilities at what you can do in future moves and decisions by doing so. So you've done that just for the fact of it feels like getting a fifth in return and not losing a pick in this upcoming draft. Like, I don't grasp that being value by any stretch of the imagination. You've only hurt yourself a little bit when it comes to your asset management. And then to cherry on top, double down and go, all right, we're going to restructure the contract to do it this way. You're like, wow. There needs to be something we need to know better of for this to make more sense, because it just, from a business standpoint, from a sensical, like, does this make sense? Does the value match? It just does not. No part of it makes sense in that when you put it aside or separate this from the player itself, like just strictly what the player is and capabilities are, you know, that's great and all, but then assessing the value and looking at what you did in order to acquire that. And then on top of it, what you're doing to that asset in house now with the contract on your books, it's like, holy shit, you are really putting 2 foot, you know, jumping in 2 feet and just going, this is exactly what we needed. This is what we needed to do. And you know, I love the statement of it almost has and smells like you negotiated with yourself, or you outbid yourself, because I just don't understand. I can't wrap my head around how you came to the conclusion of that much when the Bears were all but publicly making it known that they had to move on from this asset. Like, you've spent what you did from something that was a deteriorating asset or a depreciating asset to that side. And you've essentially bailed them out with it's a second round pick. It's a late second round pick, but it's a quality asset. That is what it is. You've gotten them out of a hole here. You have helped them out and also handed them a 2. It's questionable.
And at the time it looked like that 2 was going to be something they could use to package for Max Crosby. But ultimately, he goes to the Ravens, and what is a very nice deal for them. We'll see if it works out. I was surprised how many people that I consider smart didn't like the trade for Max Crosby from the Ravens standpoint, given his age and all that. But to me, I mean, I would love that problem. All right, Luca, we're at the hour mark. We talked Sabres. We talked Connor McGovern, talked DJ Moore, previewed a little bit what the Bills can do. We are planning on being live on Wednesday. I would expect a lot of at least league-wide news. And even if the Bills haven't made a ton of moves by then, we may have some answers on where is Matt Milano? Where is AJ Epenesa? Does David Edwards get that mega $18 million deal, $18 million APY deal that SpotTrack is projecting? You know, some things like that will help us know what the Bills look like. They're going to have to do something with Dawson Knox's contract. I'm assuming it's going to be a simple restructure at this point. But I would expect us to have some Bills moves to talk about by Wednesday, and look forward to it. Maybe another Sabres win to talk about as they are on the ice again on Tuesday. But for Luca, I am Josh McCarty. NFL free agency is here. The Sabres are in first place in the Atlantic. It is a beautiful time in Buffalo sports, and we will talk to you next time on Bills Chat.
Drew McIntyre here from WWE. Wielding the Claymore can be a life of chaos. When I'm not dominating in the ring, Chumba Casino is how this warrior takes a wee break. With hundreds of online social games and new weekly releases, there's always something fresh to try. And those daily boosts, next level. Even my free time feels like Valhalla. So when life feels like a battle, kick up your feet, have some fun, and let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
You're listening to a podcast right now. Driving, working out, walking the dog. If you're into podcasts, chances are you have something to say too. With RSS.com, starting your own is free and easy. Upload an episode and we distribute it to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, and hundreds more. Track your listeners, see where they're from, and start earning from ads like this, even with just 10 listeners a month. If you've been thinking about starting a podcast, this is your sign. Start free at rss.com.